Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangles
in I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macro aggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. Hey, speaking of Iconic, they wanted me to pass along the word. If you're interested in checking out what they're doing over there for 10 days for free, there's a link in the description. You can click on that and check it out for yourself. Obviously, all of David Icke's work is over there, but there's far more than that. They're making original content like weekly shows, making movies. Macroaggressions has had a home there since we started. There's a lot happening. It's kind of like the Netflix of alternative media, except without all of the cuties and pedo stuff. You know what I mean? So it's worth checking out. Go click the link in the description. Try before you buy. See what you think. I love it over there. I think you'll find more than enough content to keep you going. Hey, thanks to our sponsor, Chemical Free Body. Tim James has been great. He's been on the show a bunch. He's really enthusiastic about showing you and telling you and providing you with resources to get yourself feeling better. If 2022 is the year that you finally get your act together and get yourself in shape, you might want to check out their program, see what they've got going on. If you go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, you can take a look at what he did for me last summer. It's the detox in a box, the 90-day program he put me through. Man, I'm telling you, it cleaned me. I'm not only am I telling you, but if you go to the landing page, you can see for yourself. I made a 2-minute video showing my results from it. It's undeniable. It's crazy. It'll clean you out and make you feel a whole lot better. So if you are so inclined and looking for something like this, go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. And on your way out at the checkout, use macro promo code to save yourself a little bit extra. And also, look, since we're talking about getting ready, we're talking about getting our bodies ready, getting our minds ready. You might want to get yourself physically ready too. Prepare with macroaggressions.com is the website that My Patriot Supply has made for us. If you're interested in getting yourself some storable food. Now, I know that that sounded unthinkable 3 years ago, and now it seems like it's a necessity. You never thought you'd owe the preppers such an apology, but we do. They were right. We were wrong for making fun of them. Let's not compound the mistake. All right. Let's think proactively instead of reactively here. You're better off being a month late than a month early on buying this than a day late. You know, this, it's just one of those situations. We saw the supply chain, the wheels come off the supply chain with toilet paper. Think what's going to happen when there's no food. I mean, it's going to be gladiator school, right? So we don't want that. You're listening to crazy shows like this because you're interested in, you're interested in alternative information. Mainstream media is never going to tell you to get prepared. They want you to be unprepared. They want you to be frazzled. We don't. We want you to be thinking about this stuff three or four steps in advance. So if you are so inclined, you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, buy yourself some storable food that way, or just go to the grocery store today and buy extra food and put it someplace safe. So start thinking about these things. It's the benefit of listening to or watching shows like this. God knows you're going to get made fun of enough by your friends and family, called a conspiracy theorist for liking this stuff. We have with us someone who knows a thing or two about being called a conspiracy theorist. He is the host of Slow News Day. You can find that on Rockfin. You can find that as an audio podcast, too. That's Steve Poikkanen, everybody. What's up, Steve? Good to see you again. How are you?
Hey, Ben. I'm doing fantastic, despite us living in the middle of the controlled demolition of the American Empire, yep. The relocation of the capital of Rome, or whatever this foolishness we find ourselves in. All things considered, I'm on the sunny side.
Yeah, man, it's a trip. I mean, if only somebody was screaming from the rooftops that this stuff was coming. If only, like, your show. Look, I love your show. I love your show in its current format, but your show is about to undergo a major, a renaissance, so to speak. What's happening with Slow News Day now, and where is it going in the future?
So for the last about 3.5-4 years, what we'd mainly focused on was long form interviews. You've been on a number of times. And they're some of the audience's favorite episodes, by the way. They love some Charlie Robinson over there.
Oh, well, of course they do. Yeah. I pay them well.
I had gotten into this whole thing because I always felt like the whole point of the independent media was to make the people who don't want to be household names, household names. You know, the people who are actually manipulating the levers of power, the government we get to see is kabuki theater. We all talk about it. We all know we're being lied to. But for some reason, media specifically focuses on the actors, not the directors or the producers. So that's kind of what we've been doing. A few months ago, I started doing a morning version of the show just because I wanted to. But it took off. And my buddy Pasta from the Convo Couch, who's an election integrity expert activist, has been all over the planet covering elections, sat in with me. And in January, I may be getting invaded by my dog here in a moment.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
In January, we had the opportunity kind of come our way where the people who originally started producing his show, The Convo Couch, while they were in Los Angeles, moved out to Vegas. They have their own channel on Rockfin called Laugh After Dark. They have a comedy night in Las Vegas. Every Thursday, they're like the black comedy club in Vegas right now.
Nice.
The dude, Rob, played with, Smokey Robinson forever.
Yeah. Smokey lives in Seven Hills there in Henderson. I didn't live in his neighbor. I lived in Seven Hills, but I didn't live in his neighbor. I used to drive by his house. You drive by his house on one side and I'd say, well, that's Smokey Robinson's house. And then I'd drive by Pierre Omidar's house on the other side.
Oh, wow.
That's where the drone strike needs to go.
Wow. But yeah, so Rob played with Smokey for years and years and years. And so he's producing the comedy night. He picked the bay, he picks comics. But he also had set up a thing with Pasta where they were going to go in on a studio space. And in January, he was like, we should do the morning show from Vegas.
Yeah,
like, you're absolutely right. So we're about to what the morning show basically is right now is like an hour and a half of super condensed news clips, apocalypse prep, dick jokes, and occasional appearances by comedians. So we're going to kind of expand that out and see what we can do with 3 hours at a pop, see who we can't get in throughout that time for interviews. We know some of the best journalists on the planet. We have the opportunity to have live comics come into the studio and fuck around with us. And, I mean, it's Vegas, dude. We could get damn near anybody a car to come at 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning to come in for an hour, get them high and bullshit.
Yeah. It'll be just like Hoda and Jenna Bush, right? Just be like, yeah, you guys for the third hour.
Yeah.
You guys can just talk about brunch and bongs.
I would love to get Jenna Bush on the show.
She would get high as fuck too.
I would love to smoke weed with Jenna Bush.
Let's make that happen. Everybody drinking champagne with Hoda or wine at, you know, 11 a.m. That's normal. Everybody, that you're not breaking any sort of new territory there, but get Jenna Bush baked on the show. Get
Jenna Bush blunted at 10 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning.
I'm there for that, dude.
Wake and bake with Jenna. I'm all for it.
Yeah. But anything can happen in Vegas, though. Anything like that, to have the show, I mean, for you guys to have that show and to expand it is a great idea, but to do it in Las Vegas is even better, because you're going to have, I mean, as somebody that lived there for a decade and still has, I still run a real estate brokerage there. My mom's out there. I'm there all the time. It's a great city. Everybody in the world comes through there at some point. And you can peel them off one at a time. Say, hey, come on, we'll send a car for you. Come to the studio. It's bullshit.
The Libertarian Convention is in Vegas in a couple of months. One of the biggest comedy festivals, or at least like underground-ish, in Skankfest is going to be out there this fall.
Skankfest is going to be there?
Skankfest Vegas. Okay, so tickets go on sale April 1st. They're going to sell out in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, they are.
So I'm going to try and get in on that, and I'm going to try and buy a handful, but I'm also going to try and get media passes to it to see if we do it that way. But I want to try and get a half a dozen tickets, because if we can get passes, then I'm giving them away, or I'm taking it as a show promotion, or I do with you something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be awesome, dude.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah, those guys are doing great shit. Lewis and the team over there are out of their minds, but like in the best way possible.
Hell yeah, dude. Fun fact, Luis J. Gomez and I share a birthday.
Really?
And it's funny because sometimes like he'll go off and I'll be watching with somebody else. They'll be like, what the fuck, dude? And I'm sitting there like, that's perfectly justifiable in every way, shape, or form. And I understand completely why you just screamed at that total stranger.
Yeah. 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 You know, it's cosmic. There's a cosmic connection there. Yeah, I think
astrology is metaphysical racism. I think it's all woo and nonsense, but you know.
Go with it. What's your sign? Yeah, it's the greatest, man. I love it. What's the biggest, what's on your radar these days? Obviously, you were just on the Union of the Unwanted show. We were talking about Ukraine, and you had like, there were some rants in there where I was just like leaning back, like, you go, Steve, you go. Like, cause there's, I don't pretend to understand the backstory of it. You know, I know that we're going back like Holodomor, right? Like starvation, and there's a dark relationship between these two. And for some, you know, some 20 something gen to be like, I stand with Ukraine because they're on the right side of history. It's like, listen, lady, there's so much to unpack between the relationship. You want to talk about, it's like walking into an argument between some family and you go, I'm on this guy's side. It's like, wait, this argument goes back. You have no idea. This family reunion 30 years ago is where this argument spawns from. And to inject yourself into it and pretend like we understand, but you do, you have we had you on, and we had Tony Arterburn on, and one of the reasons why I wanted him on, because I knew that he was deployed when he was an Army Ranger in Kosovo. And to me, there's similarities between these. And I wanted to kind of unearth, if possible, what those similarities were, like what the narrative was for Kosovo, because I wasn't really, I have to admit, I wasn't really paying attention to that in the late 90s. And anything that I did know, I knew from the mainstream media. So it's like negative points for me on that one. But I know that other people do know, and you have a pretty good understanding of what's going on in Ukraine. So what's going on? What are we doing? Why are we doing this? What's happening here?
Well, and first shout out to Tony, because that was awesome having him on.
Yeah.
Too. There's a number of different ways that you can look at it. And this is such a multi-layered issue that it gets overly complex, because you're absolutely right. It's a you know, centuries long, deep seated ethnic conflict in Ukraine, inarguably Western Ukraine, ethnically primarily Germanic. Eastern Ukraine, primarily ethnically Russian, and specifically Russian Jewish. In fact, not just gold in my ear, but like five total of Israel's prime ministers are all originally from Ukraine, from Eastern Ukraine. They used to call Odessa the gateway to Zion was Odessa.
Wow.
So there's a very, very long, you know, ethnically Germanic versus ethnically Russian or specifically Russian Jew conflict that goes back a very long time to like dark ages, almost 1400s. But specifically with the collapse of the Soviet Union, 1990-1991, the breakup of you know, the Baltic states, the sort of federating of Russia and all of that. When that took place, Kosovo declared itself an independent republic, and didn't want any part of the Russian Federation, didn't want any part of anything. There was a handshake deal that NATO wouldn't expand eastward. Fast forward 9 years to 1999. NATO has expanded eastward. There is a significant amount of conflict going on in Kosovo specifically, in Serbia specifically, based along ethnic lines. The United States and NATO decide, well, here's an opportunity for us to expand our, you know, our sphere of influence, for us to pick up territory and for us to get a little bit closer to Russia. So they recognize Kosovo's independence for 78 straight days. US and NATO bombed Serbia, which I think most people have forgotten about now. It's just horrific war crime after war crime after war crime, shelling the civilian population.
We were told NATO doesn't invade.
NATO doesn't invade. The U.S. doesn't do regime change.
Right.
Jen Psaki told us last
right.
week. We don't do regime change. We don't do chemical weapons. We don't do anything. We don't do. We're purely a defensive force in the world.
We do all those things, and we do them before breakfast. Like
to our own people,
of course,
to our own civilian population.
Sure.
We do that. If anybody doubts if we drop bombs on our own civilian population, you look up the Philly Move bomb.
Philadelphia. Yeah, I was just going to say. They blew up a whole city block to get like one guy or something.
Yeah. Which led to the arrest of Mumia eventually. Because he was a journalist who was trying to cover all of that. Also a Move member. But yeah, anyway. The Kosovo thing happening in 1999, the justification that NATO used to enter was because they had declared themselves an independent republic and they had rights and they should be recognized. NATO had to send troops in to help them protect their new borders. Mm-hmm. And they had to conduct a couple of targeted strikes into Serbia just so that the Serbs knew that Kosovo was independent and everybody meant business. So in 2014, in the Ukraine, the United States under Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, they orchestrated the what do they call it?
fortification of Ukraine's election. That's what Time Newsweek called it when they put it on the front, that the cabal secured and fortified the election.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe
just that. Like vitamin C.
I can't read. Yeah. Election.
Vitamin C of election.
Riboflavin. So the U.S. installs a puppet president in Ukraine in 2014. Poroshenko, it was under a far right wing nationalist party where they were, in fact, literally supported by the sons and grandsons and daughters and granddaughters of Ukrainian Nazis during World War II. This is who formulates Ukraine's government coming into 2014. There's a huge backlash over it. Crimea, you guys remember when Vladimir Putin invaded and annexed Crimea? What happened was Crimea said, we don't recognize this government as legitimate. We are going independent. We put it up to a vote and we've decided that we would like to join the Russian Federation. And that turned into, you know, almost a war. Two other areas in Ukraine, the Donetsk and the Luhansk, also declared independence. They're not a port city. They are not as strategically important as Crimea. So we didn't hear about that in the West. What happened for the next 8 years was a quiet genocide in an area of the Donetsk called the Donbas, where up to right around 15,000 people that we know of, ethnically Russian Eastern Ukrainians in Donbas, were murdered by Eastern Ukrainians or Western Ukrainians, ethnically German, specifically a group of fighters called the Azov Battalion, which proudly display multiple Nazi insignia all over their uniforms, that their you know, flags and all that kind of stuff.
Undeniable.
Like they're open about it.
They're
like, fuck yes, we're not we're only Nazis. Are we Nazis, we're Banderite Nazis. Stefan Bandera being the Nazi collaborator from Ukraine, who now has statues of him all over the west of Ukraine. There's a great clip, you've probably seen it, is where I'm headed with this now, of Vladimir Zelensky when he was a stand-up comic, kind of doing the roast where he's writing the letter home. It addresses it to Ukraine's oligarchs. And he's like, dear Uncle Igor, that's Igor Kolomoisky, who made Zelensky president, who also made Azov Battalion come to life, who made Right Sector come to light, who made C-14. These are neo-Nazi groups within Ukraine that act as volunteer police or are part of the military or are militia types that frequently conduct pogroms throughout the Ukraine, proudly display videos of them tearing apart like towns, villages, Romani camps, all kinds of crazy shit. Zelensky's out there saying, as a comic, saying, you know, well, so of course I joined the Banderites. It's the only way you could get a job, you know. But hey, they let me make money, so I'm happy. I'm glad we have money. Of course, we also have the ability to take whatever the Russians have in terms of money or property, but that doesn't count anyway. It used to be the Jews, now it's the Russians. That's what it is. And then she's just politely, or not politely, but just calmly roasting the fact that you have to be a out front neo-Nazi in order to be allowed to participate in government in Ukraine.
That's wild, considering he is, or at least has, Jewish ancestry.
Yeah. Although the one of the quotes that's being thrown around right now, at least in independent media, is that in 2018 or 19, when he was asked about it, he was like, look, being Jewish doesn't even break the top 20 on my list of faults. Okay.
Right.
You know, which is a perfectly good answer.
It's a funny, I mean, if you're a comedian, it's a great answer. If you're a comedian, you know, it's less expected when you're the president or whatever, but it's a good line.
But Kolomoisky, the Igor Kolomoisky, the oligarch, and I don't know why I'm saying rich fuck, look, man, is it just because they don't live in America doesn't mean there's only oligarchs outside of America. We have oligarchs too. Yeah. This rich fuck who is bankrolling the president of Ukraine, who made it so that his media outlet is the media outlet, who banned four other media outlets in Ukraine at Kolomoyskyy's orders, four media outlets gone from Ukraine. The guy who also funds the Nazis. He made a TV show where Zelensky becomes the president. He named the party on the TV show. Then they ran Zelensky as the guy from the TV show in a reality style campaign to become president. The party that Zelensky is the president or the party that he belongs to is the party from the TV show. They made that a national party.
Right. It didn't exist before the TV show. It was created.
Didn't exist before the TV show.
As if, like, in the same way, if Seinfeld created a political campaign, a political party.
The Kramerites or something
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. And Kramer was the head of it, and it was a big joke and everything. And then this oligarch said, yes, but we're going to do this in real life, right? And they said, Kramer, you be president now, right? And he goes, Yeah.
And so that, I mean, it happened.
Once again, proving your line, we live in a fucking cartoon. I mean, it like stamped right on it with this.
It really is. It's insane. They took the actual television character and the party that they made up, and then they put it into real life. And the character is supposed to fight corruption. The first thing Zelensky does is he protects all of Kolomoyskyy's money offshore. They tried to look into Kolomoyskyy. That's even one of the things that Donald Trump got impeached over, was asking questions about this guy.
Really?
You're not supposed to have more than one passport in Ukraine. You're not supposed to have dual citizenship. Kolomoyskyy has a Swiss, Israeli, and Ukrainian passport. And when they asked it, you know, they're like, hey, you're not supposed to have two passports. This is the quote. I don't know if it actually happened or not, but the quote is, he goes, it's okay, I have three. Two's no problem. I have three. And that's just kind of how he is. But I mean, there have been stories in the Western media, in American media, about Zelensky's corruption, about him hiding his own money, about him hiding Kolomoyskyy's money, about him looking like a freaking idiot in front of Azov battalion, where he says to them, you know, like, I'm 40 years old. I'm not a loser. I'm the president of the country. I want you guys out of here. And they're like, piss off, twerp. You don't run shit.
You're a TV president.
Yeah. Look at you. Why don't you go put on your makeup, pal? We got stuff to do.
Why don't you go play piano with your dick again?
Yeah, which is a great bit.
A great bit, and on camera. You can watch it.
Yeah, yeah. The president of Ukraine is standing next to another comedian, and the bit is them playing piano with their penises. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, again, funny.
Not bad.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say we haven't had comedians as presidents, because we kind of have.
Yeah.
Trump, really arguably funny.
Right.
Like, and even Trevor Noah, Charlie, is admitting that, like, is trying to rehabilitate Trump. We're going to see the shit lib rehabilitation of Trump over the next couple of years.
That's going
to
be
starting to lay the groundwork for it.
There's going to be a lot of pulled hamstrings and torn ACLs from this sort of mental gymnastics that's going to happen from these shit libs trying to make Trump look better. That ought to be fun.
Dude, they're going to bring what they're going to have to do is they're going to have like Brian Stelter moderate a conversation between Trump and like blunted Candace Owens. Somebody's going to have to get Candace super high and be like, just go talk that shit, girl. Just go talk it. talk it. You know, Candace, you know what the game is. Just get out there and get him and just have her do it. And then that would rehabilitate Trump entirely. It would also lead to my eventual proposal of marriage for Candace Owens. But
there you go.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I like him sentiment, Charlie. I do.
Hey, I hear you. I hear you. It's a strange, you know, this whole all the politics is theater, but it's so on the nose with the Zelensky thing. You know, the fact that he, you know, it's not like back in my youth, I did a little bit of acting. It's like, no, you're known for being an actor, comedian, whatever. You're known for that. And we plucked you right out of that. And it's actually kind of what we've been saying for a while. Like, Jesus, you mean we can't do any, but we've got a Bush going against a Clinton. Like, can we just pick someone at random? From the studio audience of the United States of America, just go pick somebody. Just go to a truck stop. Find some guy. Hey, you look like you know what you're doing, or maybe don't. I don't know. What are you doing for the next 4 years? We're going to need you. You know, that is a better option than what we currently have. So the idea of them just kind of making a TV show about a guy who becomes the president, and then that guy actually becomes president. There's something like, The stoner in me finds there's something very refreshing about this, like, self-fulfilling time loop continuum that just sort of works.
Right. Does this mean we're finally starting to be honest about it? Like, yeah.
I mean, that's part of it too. It's like when you start to, I feel like the simulation machine needs to be oiled up a little bit more, because you've got Trevor Noah coming off the rails, talking and saying nice things about Trump. You've got the perpetual motion machine is starting to shake a little bit, and the Zelensky narrative winds up coming true, and this guy becomes president. Next thing you know, like, you know, we had Donald Trump. Everyone's like, Donald Trump would be president. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That'll never happen. Then he becomes president, and then people are like, oh, you know, it's going to be great when The Rock and Kim Kardashian. I'm like, stop saying this stuff, man. Like, we live in a universe where you might be able to speak this shit into existence, and I just don't know if I can take that. Like, I understand we've got to deal with, like, a certain level of political fuckery, but if The Rock and Kim Kardashian become the president and vice president, I'm leaving. I'm just leaving, because I don't want to be that close to the show.
We're in a very real possibility of seeing, though, the 2024 presidential election become Make America One Party for Real. And that's what it looks like it's shaping up to be. It looks like they want Tulsi Gabbard to be the reform Democrat. Look, I don't even want party labels, guys. Really, I just want to surf. I don't even want to be doing this world leader thing. I just want aloha. But because we don't have aloha, we're all going to have to unite. And me and Ron DeSantis are going to, you know, show you the way forward. Or me and Dan Crenshaw, my buddy from Young Global Leaders
at the World Economic
Forum, we're going to show you the way forward. Or there's going to be another vacancy in the Supreme Court over the next year. Biden's going to throw everyone a curveball, put Harris there, and then pluck Liz Cheney up out of the House and be like, look, you guys, it's too much right left division. We're here for unity. We're trying to get behind this thing, because I really do think by this time next year, one of the likely scenarios is we're Oceania and we've always been at war with Eurasia, which is now Russia and China, who have had to form deeper economic ties because of the sanctions that we've been levying against Russia for the last 3.5 weeks. It's funny, Charlie. And I don't know if I actually mean funny on this, but it is really funny that for 30 years of glasnost, of post-Soviet reality, every smartest person in the room, from whatever angle, whether they want it or they don't want it, and all points in between, have all said the only way you are ever going to see anything like World War III ever again is if and only if NATO tries to expand further east into Russia's sphere of influence. The only way you're going to get a provocation, a response from Russia, is if you do this thing. And for 30 fucking years, Charlie, that's exactly what NATO does.
Yeah.
And everybody knows what the inevitable is. Everybody knows what the line in the sand is. Everybody knows where you can't park missiles and where you can't send troops. So when all of the smartest people in the room all know the inevitable outcome, and all of those smart people take steps to ensure that inevitability, you have to look at that as an intentional operation and something that is part and parcel of a larger agenda.
Yeah. If you say this one thing, I'm going to punch you in the face. And then they stand around and they say the one thing. It's like, it's frustrating, but it's also really dangerous. It's super dangerous. And I don't know if this is some sort of theater where both sides are in on it and they're playing this part, because, you know, we do see Sparebank and Russia having deep ties to the World Economic Forum, and their involvement in this makes me kind of obviously uneasy. But I'm wondering, are we really seeing a fight between these two, or are we seeing some sort of puppet master operation going on from Uncle Klaus and the gang that's trying to manipulate us into a situation where we're forced into this fourth industrial revolution due to the fact that World War III has broken out and these guys are all playing their role? So I wonder how much of a factor is the WEF's role with Russia playing into this?
I would say that probably a step above the WEF or a couple of steps above them at the global banking level is where the cooperation truly lies. The WEF and Russia have kind of like distanced themselves from each other over the last couple of weeks. Okay, so this is what I find most interesting. And this is what I'm going to be dedicating a lot of time to when I get to Vegas, because it's a place that I can eventually find out whether I want to or not. And that is, over the last, and it's really been quick, 5 months, that the mainstream-ish has found out about Klaus and the World Economic Forum and has become a talking point. Glenn Beck wrote a book, and now James Lindsay is a fucking expert on it. Prior to that, it was like us, you know, and Whitney and Ryan, and we were the ones that were screaming about this thing. And then the entire Peter Thiel-influenced universe pounced on the World Economic Forum. And the Dark Horse podcast started talking about it. Rogan started talking, Lex Friedman, all of the people that are inextricably connected to Peter Thiel's like media sphere of influence pounced on the WEF and brought it into public consciousness. Mm-hmm. Now that should have people going, where's the other shoe? What's the other shoe? And instead, people are going, World Economic Forum, I never heard of it, you know. Right. So they're focused, hyper focused in a lot of ways on that, and not looking at all at who Peter Thiel or his sphere of influence is or what it does. Peter Thiel, by the way, has everybody's health information. It's Palantir that got the contracts with with NHS, with our health services. Was the last thing Peter Thiel got before he dropped Trump as a donor was health information contracts. By the way, also Peter Thiel has like the ICE contracts and partnership with Amazon Ring and all kinds of like really what it's not okay. What that dude, the Carbine 911, all kinds of shit.
Oh, he's involved with that too. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's not good. Ambrosia, the blood you know, mm-hmm. company where they take young kids' blood and sell it to old rich men. You know, just a conspiracy theory.
But so the pushback to the World Economic Forum and the idea that Russia is a nation of humanitarians led by a Christian humanitarian and Putin, and they're fighting the globalists. And now Alex Jones has been running with that for several months. And that whole sphere is kind of picked up on this theory that it's really, really Russia versus the NWO.
Mm-hmm.
But they're now trillions of dollars more partnered with China. And I'm not sure how that sphere has squared that circle yet. But what I know for a fact is that when there's no news or very limited news about one of the most influential people on the planet who isn't really connected to at the like partnership and agreement level, the WEF is doing a very sinister own thing with his surveillance and with media and with commerce. We need to be looking at that, you know, or at least I do. That's my job. Yeah, I need to be looking at that for sure. There's, you know, even Robbie Martin's douchebag ass has picked up on this.
Wow.
It's time that we all as this sphere of media take a big step back and go, okay, man, we sounded the alarm. We knew years ago who these guys were.
Yeah.
Now it's time for us to sound the alarm on the next set of scumbags because you're starting to get distracted.
Well, I never trusted Alex Karp, and I think that he's up to no good. And he's running Palantir. And I think Peter's got his own, you know, sort of above it all. He starts the companies. And for those that don't know, Peter Thiel is one of the co-founders of PayPal. He's the guy in the Social Network movie where, you know, 10% stake of Facebook for $500,000. You know, he's an influential guy. He's an unusual guy. He's a right-leaning guy in Silicon Valley. He's a gay guy, which isn't a big deal. It's not a big deal anywhere, but it's especially not a big deal in Silicon Valley. But it's very unusual when you become a Trump supporter and do that. And so he took I did an episode on the creatures from Sand Hill Road, taking a look at the money behind VC firms up in Menlo Park and Palo Alto. And a lot of that obviously has got Peter Thiel's fingerprints all over it since he's, you know, very influential there. So I think that these venture capital firms and the amount of money that they have and their ability to you know, their partnerships with the World Economic Forum and InQtel, and it creates this very sinister partnership where I don't think, you know, I get it if you just want to start a company and make a bunch of money, and I understand that, and I don't inherently have a problem with that. But what Peter Thiel and his group are doing is, they've got all the money in the world. This isn't about money. This is about control. And this is where you start to get into some real, well, real gray areas where that's actually a good guy to do a deep dive on, because I think that he's a big player in this. And and of course the guy I just mentioned in Henderson, Pierre Omidyar, he's up to no good as well. And I don't trust these guys. There's something that happens, and I don't know if these guys are placed in position of power or if it happens organically and something changes in your head. But once you get to a point where you've got all the money in the world and you can buy anything with a price tag on it, and you probably have, you then start going to look for things that aren't for sale. And media management, perception of reality, all of these education systems. We saw the Rockefellers and Carnegies and Gates, and they go down there. So how can I now manipulate all of society? I've done a great job with my company or maybe my industry, but now I'm looking to control the world. I think that that bug inside your head that gives you the brain and the drive to build these multi-billion dollar companies, I don't know that that gets shut off so easily. And they start looking for their next high. And when you've run everything, the next high you get is, well, let's see if I can control, oh, I don't know, everybody's information flow. You know, so these guys are very... You'd like to have a good one, and that you'd like to have a good guy that gets into these positions because you feel like they could get a lot done. They always turn out to be bad, don't they?
Well, and there's an underlying component that I don't know if a lot of people even necessarily either connect or want to talk about. But after spending so much time into the Assange world, it's hard to get around. And that is, most of the people who have achieved kajillionaire level success in Silicon Valley or through tech, ass burgers as fuck. Oh, yeah. And what you can do with somebody who's on the spectrum like that, and the ways in which you can block out external stimuli or information that you don't want, and the sort of like malleability, which I'm going to say some shit that just sounds horrible. And it's not me saying that I would do this. What I'm saying is I have witnessed this be done to these people. And we have to look at a lot of this as if we've all agreed that there are, you know, people who are, for lack of a better term, running the show. And if we all agree that part of the function of an intelligence agency is to run and manipulate people, then it's not that hard of an extrapolation to see the heart of both Silicon Valley or the where you find this creativity and this genius in an academic setting, which is also the home of the intelligence apparatus to a large degree. Yeah. Not hard to see a couple of you know, forward thinking individuals go, hey man, I know that guy's not all that great socially. I know that guy might be a little weird. I know that guy might be, you know, distracted or easily distractible, but if you get him focused, he's fucking unstoppable. Mm-hmm. And we are going to need this. We're going to need that brain in our arsenal going forward. So whatever we have to tell him, whatever we have to show the world, however we have to do it, we're going to make this work. And I think that part of the reason that you've seen such an uptick in people on the spectrum over the last 30, 40 years is because when you've got people that do become hyper-focused like that and can or just dismiss all external stimuli while they're hyper-focused on this thing, you can effectively have a population of damn near slaves. Or automatons, mm-hmm. who just have a task, stay at the task, have their Soylent protein, hang out in the metaverse, and that's your controlled society as Silicon Valley overlord or group of overlords.
Well, we saw what happened when you get somebody that's a little bit on the spectrum and give them a task and tell them to focus on it. You get you can get tremendous insight. I'm talking about Michael Burry from The Big Short, who rightly called the housing market. I was working in the housing market in Las Vegas, and I couldn't see what he saw, but he could see it. And he's admitted to being sort of a little bit Asperger's or Aspergery, if that's even a, well, it's a new term. We've got
the dogs here.
The dog has joined the chat. Sweet boy.
Gomez is in the building.
Yes. Okay, yeah. It's the world is run by tech nerds.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that is
the worst kind too. The trust fund kind.
The trust fund kind, not the kind that got stuffed in lockers. Or maybe
no. Maybe. Well, I mean, look, dude, those were the John McAfee guys. That was that generation. And maybe to a degree, the people who were in our generation. But there's like a whole new swath of tech nerds who just got, you know, raised in that life where they were born to privilege, knew they were going to the best schools. And to be perfectly honest, but like, did nobody who's running a tech firm that's directly involved in making your life more miserable got a scholarship to MIT or Stanford or Cal Poly? All of those people got in because of money. Bill Gates is a legacy, you know. Yeah. Jeff Bezos, his freaking grandfather was the first director of DARPA. It's not like there aren't family connections to all of these people. But yeah, there's a whole new class that's just born sociopathic, raised to become more sociopathic, and then given the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
Like, okay, here's everyone's data, all of these cameras. What can you do with that?
Yeah. It's like putting, you know, it's like that analogy about the gun. You know, it's not the gun that's bad or good. It's depends on whose hand it's in. And so this information, we rightly understand that we're leaving a digital trail wherever we go. It's kind of the trade-off. We've understood that in some levels, we get the service for free, be that Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, because we are the product. We've agreed to that on some level, some maybe conscious level, maybe subconscious level. But we, I guess, mistakenly or maybe hopefully just hope that the people in charge don't use it for nefarious purposes. People are out there going, I want to see if I'm one millionth Cherokee Indian. So I sent this swab into 23andMe. And it's like, I wouldn't do that if I were you, because those people are controlled. I mean, it's the Google co-founder's wife who's running that company. So are we at some point, like at some level, just sort of at the mercy of these tech overlords? Because like, if they want to switch things off, like really, or make our lives hell, what can we really do to stop it? At this point, we've bought into the system.
I mean, well, yeah, to a degree, but because you've been hammering on this for the entire time you've had a show about how to get yourself a little bit less bought in. You know, you're the guy who's telling people, look, man, maybe we overreacted 5 years ago at the preppers. You're the guy who's teaching people or encouraging people to learn about, precious metals, yeah, alternative currency and stuff like that. So it's not like we're getting hit with this off guard. No. And it's not like we aren't taking steps in our own lives to be a little bit more secure ourselves when something like that happens. There's no privacy online. None. None, none. There's operational security. And you are as private as the steps you take to make yourself operationally secure. But that can get pretty involved. Now, what's great is that there is they're kind of shady in origin, but Matrix Element as a messaging app, that is that if you don't, the only person who can see that message has the de-encrypt keys. And you're the only person who has the send keys. Element and Matrix itself, as the host client, cannot see what you're sending. Gotcha. There's no intercepting that message. You have to be on, you have to have both keys. So as far as secure messaging, I can confidently recommend that as a good step to take in being more operationally secure, but I'm never going to guarantee privacy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, let's wrap up on this last topic. It's something that you've been hammering on. If I've been hammering on one thing, you've been hammering on building parallel societies, so to speak, a different, let's not try to fix this currently broken system that was held together with duct tape and gum. Let's build a different system and we'll siphon off all the good people from the bad system that want to come join this good system. Instead of fixing what we've currently got, we'll just build a better version of it over here. And if anyone wants to come play with us, then they can. And by comparison, it will make the old system look like garbage. Where are you going with that? Because you've been very vocal, and I think that you're right about this being the step forward, kind of leading by example. Like, I'll show you because I think a lot of people suffer from this, and myself too, to an extent, this inability to imagine what a different version of society could look like, because we've been in this version for so long, and we get, you know, spinoffs. I go to an Acapulco and I see like some smart people talking about some interesting things and doing it. But what does this look like in your estimation? How are we structuring this in a way that actually can last? And where do we go from here?
Well, okay. So I have a problem with selling certainty, right? But I can give some ideas and some concepts.
But that makes the sales pitch even better. Right. Because if you were selling certainty, that would be a red flag.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. Here's what I know. Here's what I know for a fact. We can all recognize that the machine as it currently operates, the global political machine, the way the global financial capital works, the way that all of the, you know, the way that surveillance capital and the surveillance industry permeates even something as mundane as what laundry soap you buy. We can all agree that machine is not designed to work for us. Right. So our solution to this machine should not be, let's slap a couple shiny new parts on it every couple of years, because all you're doing is voting in people who are going to prolong the life of that machine. You've now incentivized those people to keep the machine that doesn't work for you running. So the way that machine operates is on a centralized financial system operated through the International Bank of Settlements and a number of world banks and central banks carry down from there. Learning ways to engage in counter economics that are specifically designed to break central capital. That's the key. Getting the end result and people exchanging labor for capital or labor for goods or labor for something of value that doesn't rely on the central banking system. If we can engage in what I would consider economic warfare that way. Everybody talks about we will revolution this, revolution that. A revolution just brings you right back to where you started. You have to ascend. If you want anything done, you can't do it as a revolutionary. You have to do it in a way that brings up your entire consciousness, because the shit that we've done doesn't work. Shit that we've done stacks bodies. It wrecks the planet. And I'm not a climate change global warming guy. I know it's not good to dig up the planet for cobalt and make kids do it just so you can power the internet of bodies. Think that's probably something we'll have to revisit. But by successfully engaging in counter economics and using the institutions that have failed us, like academia, as a parallel setting for this, for the practice of talking about getting away from a centralized state, using physical restaurants. We've seen this throughout the COVID PSYOP and throughout the trucker protest, where your town's locked down. Okay, well, we're protesting in front of our government building. Restaurant owners have now come outside. They're using their kitchen and the state's electricity, the state's gas to make this stuff, but they're bringing the products outside and setting up shop. And now we are directly exchanging goods, services, and capital parallel to the structures at which we used to on a different economic system. I mean, it's hard to get around that. You have to become violent immediately, right? As the state, you have to become violent immediately. But if everybody is doing this, if you've got this going on throughout sectors, and if you've got specific portions of labor, Uber drivers, let's say, and taxi drivers and bus drivers, people that get people from place to place, let's say they go on strike that day, and also your IT sector does, and so do your baristas, all of these things shut down. And then there are multiple parallel operations of this going on. The resources of the state and its ability to use its monopoly on violence to break up some sort of protest like that is stretched too thin.
Yeah,
it's stretched way too thin. There simply aren't enough people to levy violence on behalf of the state to counteract coordinated strikes and parallel structures going on at the same time. We got to get a lot of people to drop some ego to get on a page like that. But I think it could happen.
Well, and for those people that want to know more about this, because it's impossible to unpack this sort of a concept in 10 minutes, they've got to go follow you. They've got to start watching Slow News Day. What's the best place for people to find you, to connect with you? Oh, by the way, you got to follow him on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, you have to follow Steve on Twitter too, or what's the point of being on Twitter as far as I'm concerned?
I have some fun with that account. I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
But please check the show out on rockfin.com/slow news day. In about 2 weeks, we're going to be entirely self-hosted. We'll still have the Rockfin channel and all that stuff, but that'll be secondary to where we're advertising, which will be slownewsdayshow.com. And then so all of the social media and half of the donate links at Slow News Day Show. That's Twitter, Instagram, Gitter, Gab, blah, 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 blah. All the places I never log on to check whether or not anyone said anything to me. But yeah, Slow News Day Show. We'll get you just about everywhere. And I am really looking forward to being self-hosted. We're operating solely on value for value with the morning show. No sponsors, no advertising, none of that stuff. We're putting it all out to the audience. We're putting it all out for free. Seeing if we can't blow it up.
Well, I think you guys are doing great stuff. I love your work. I love Pasta's work. I'm excited for you guys to be in Las Vegas. And for those of you who are new to Slow News Day or to Steve Poikonen, I encourage you to take a look at his stuff. It's great. If you like my stuff and my snarky, shitty sense of humor, you're gonna like Steve's. You're gonna,
boy, does this guy have a shittier sense of humor.
I mean, we fuck with everybody. I mean, it, you know, but not for nothing. It's warranted, right? Like the people we go after are deserving of our snarkiness, you know, and we oblige them. So
it's true.
What do you want from us? We can't help ourselves. We see insanity, we call it out. Hey, if you like this show or this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to follow me on Twitter while you're following Steve at Macroaggressions, the website www.theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Steve, you are the best, and I will talk to you all later. Thanks, everybody.